Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to discuss this outbreak with you all. So on July 7th, 2016, we were notified by the owner of a residential camp of 8 cases of STEC. Both campers and staff were ill, and at this time, the camp owner requested a site visit. In New Hampshire, camps fall under environmental services, meaning that a joint site visit was required between environmental services and health and human services. At this time, we completed a full evaluation of all food service areas and identified that they had the 2 cookouts on July 2nd and July 4th, that they had cooked these hamburgers outside on an open flame, and that they were just visually inspecting these burgers for doneness. They weren't actually using thermometers. Environmental services also conducted an inspection of the pool and the lake facilities, while epidemiology and nursing began initial interviews with the ill campers and working with the medical staff at the camp to determine case-finding methods. Stool samples were requested from all ill campers and staff. All 8 had indistinguishable PFGE patterns. This pattern matched 2 other non-camp-associated cases in New Hampshire, which had previously been interviewed. So at this time, we decided to send out a multi-state notification to identify additional cases. 5 cases from 4 states were identified. So our case definition is a culture-confirmed STEC infection with onset on or after June 15th with an indistinguishable PFGE pattern. 15 cases met this definition, 14 primary and 1 secondary case. 1 case of HUS was identified, though not associated with the camp, and no deaths occurred. Here's our epi curve. You see there are 2 separate clusters with approximately 1 week between these 2 without any illnesses. 87% of cases had exposure to raw or undercooked ground beef. 9 had beef from farm P. 3 had beef from farm Q. 1 had beef from farm R. 2 could not say for sure if they had beef exposure. 1, the proxy for the cases, couldn't tell if they did or not. And the other 1 claimed they never ate meat, but ate at a restaurant that also served meat from farm P. All 3 farms processed their beef at Farm Q, a USDA-inspected facility. So here's our trace back. At first, this looked like we had 3 separate farms until we discovered that Farm Q actually processes meat for 7 different farms. So the trace back information, the USDA conducted an inspection of the slaughter facility. They identified a single slaughter day as the possible source of contamination. And then at this time, the facility issued a recall of approximately 8,800 pounds of ground beef and other beef products. And here's our epi curve again. You see the slaughter day on the 6th, and then our little clusters there. The reason for the gap between the non-camp and the camp-associated cases is that all of our non-camp-associated cases had received fresh ground beef, while our camp had received frozen ground beef. So in conclusion, we determined that raw or undercooked beef from a common supplier was the source of the outbreak. A single slaughter day was identified as the possible source of contamination, which led to 8,800 pounds of beef being recalled. And we recommend that proper handling and cooking of beef is recommended. These are everyone I'd like to acknowledge. I apologize if I missed anyone. And once again, thank you for the opportunity and for your time.
Thank you very much. That was our last speaker. If you do have a question, please come up to the mic at the front of the room. So, any questions? If not, oh, we got a question, but in the meantime, let's give all of our speakers a round of applause. Putting those presentations together and doing it in a 5-minute time with the buzzer going off at 2 minutes, you know, I can't imagine. So well done.
Beth Bailey from New Hampshire, those were all well done. My question is for Nicole, who had the Shigella outbreak in the homeless. It seems like you had a lot of things working against you to figure out that outbreak, in that you had homeless people who were maybe less likely to seek care, and then also just assessing their homelessness status. And I'm just curious if you talk a little bit about how you developed that initial hypothesis in the first place, and what made you think about looking at homelessness as a risk factor.
Okay, so homelessness as a risk factor. So as I kind of briefly alluded, those early cases in the outbreak were mostly while those challenges of data collection in terms of identifying particular shelters or services people will utilize in the week or so before their estimated onset date, it was fairly easy to figure out that people were not homeless. If we weren't able to reach them before interview through those medical charts, a lot of times it's mentioned in the notes or again addresses for a shelter. And so we actually, out of all of the 106 cases that we had, there was only one person for whom housing status could not be identified. And that person was excluded from our analysis. Mm-hmm.
Next question.
Hi, Tom Weiser from Portland Indian Health Service. And my first question actually goes to Drew, not because you're from Missouri and I work with you, but you know, my wife is from Japan and she loves to eat this dish called tamagokake, which is rice with raw egg. And she only eats it when we get eggs from our neighbor down the street who produces chickens. So my question is really about pasteurization of eggs and how is that done to keep them still eggs that you can do things with without cooking them, and can you do that at home? If you know.
What an excellent question. I wish I had an answer for it. I had to take food science way, way back in my academic career, and I was not prepared for that, but that's an excellent question. That is the point to how the chef responded. He just said, oh my gosh, I want to keep these food items on my menu. I want to have the Caesar salad. I want my aioli to have raw egg in it, but I'm not buying from that guy anymore. And I'm going to have pasteurized eggs, and that he felt that should solve the problem. I'm sorry, I don't have an answer. Maybe there are other more.
Anyone from FSIS?
Yeah, anybody from FSIS who can answer that question better than I can?
Marcy, you keep on pointing at someone.
I'm sorry.
It would be very hard to do at home. It's done in a hot water bath at just below cooking temperatures for X period of time, but it depends on the size of the egg to get the right penetration without cooking the eggs. It'd be very tricky to do at home. That's why I buy them at Publix. Davidson's pasteurized eggs. Slogan, eat them any way you like. They're not fitting.
Is that the last question for me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I'm related to that. On his question, did the restaurant have a disclaimer on their menu that these items were made with raw egg?
They did. It was just a general one. And then when this happened, and the environmental public health folks came by, they were saying, oh, my goodness. And so they took out a marker, and they marked each item, and I think there were 10 or 11 items. Pretty large menu. It's actually a pretty popular touristy area in Colombia. It's not a huge county, but a lot of people come from in-state and out of state. And kind of new and pretty popular place. And the environmental folks said they ran a pretty clean shop too. So they really felt like there weren't a whole lot of opportunities from what they saw for cross-contamination. I have to say this though, because I thought it was so interesting. I had an excellent meal on Sunday night at one of the restaurants here with family who live here, and my cousin pointed out at the bottom on this menu, it said, eating high-risk foods can kill you. I think there was an exclamation point, I'm paraphrasing it, but yeah, that makes the point. was that it for me? Okay.
I have a slightly related question, but it's for Tennessee, the SE outbreak there. Thanks for giving us a preview of what it's going to be like when we turn on whole genome sequencing for salmonella and resistance and the other salmonella this year in many, many states. We're going to find lots of things we're missing right now, I'm sure. This was a trip back in time to the old days, the good old days, 1991, when there were 91 outbreaks of SE related to eggs in this country. Baroness sauce, yes. Homemade mayo, yes. Old trend. Your farm X was interesting, my question is about first of all, farm X, was it below the 3,000 N threshold that FDA uses to regulate heavily bigger farms, but kind of dozen smaller farms?
Technically, yes, it was.
It was 2,999
hens. Actually, so this farm actually had multiple locations, and each one was under the 3,000 egg rule. And they also, they had a lot of eggs, but they were also getting eggs from a bunch of other smaller farms and then selling them under the Farm X label. So they technically didn't count towards their hen count. So actually, for this outbreak, we weren't quite sure if that's why we didn't find the outbreak strain on that farm, because we could, there's no way we could have traced back which local farm they could have came from.
What made the restaurant think these eggs were safe?
I'm not sure, but actually, Restaurant A decided to stop using those eggs, and instead, they're going to raise their own hens and use those
eggs.
I don't know if they got them from El Paso healthy or not.
That's remarkable.
Yeah.
Okay, good luck. Well, you'll see it again.
Yeah, we're watching.
I had a second question, but this one's for Connecticut. Maloney, I guess, not Krasinski. And that was a delicious sounding recipe. I think I may have seen on the menu at a vast restaurant here. And something about pork tongue and tripe together, and I think it was a pork tongue, but it was a really weird bug. Where? Rare. Not like the tongue. Rare.
Right, right. Yeah, so...
Did the tongue come from elsewhere?
I'm actually not sure where the ox tongue came from, but we actually, because we did have kind of a large break, like a week-long break, we thought maybe it was like a specialty item, like a weekend special, that they might be making this ox tongue and tripe, but apparently it just wasn't that popular. So I'm not sure exactly where they were getting the ox tongue from, but they clearly were not cooking it for anywhere near the length of time it needed.
Yeah, you wonder, I mean, that tongue was attached to another...
It was clearly attached to... Yeah.
Cow, and that cow was eaten, but possibly not in this country.
I
was such an odd, strange suggestion.
Yeah, and you know, it wasn't associated with other food products there, so I mean, I don't know how much other ox product they were consuming, or probably cooking in a different manner.
Thank you.
And so I want to ask another question of the South Dakota presentation with IHS. So I wondered if before or afterwards, in talking with the sanitarians and the other staff that helped you out with that, if there was any kind of training or food handlers training or certification of the food services beforehand. A lot of times when I worked on reservation, they would go out and get food handlers class beforehand, like in July, and then they would have big rodeo and stuff in September. And so all the vendors who were going to set up at the event would have to have their food handler certification from their class. And so I wondered if they had been doing that or if they hadn't been doing the building.
Yeah, I guess to my knowledge, they hadn't done much of that, especially it's more like treated like a church potluck type setting. For these events, but I do know in follow-up after this event that they were doing some food serve programs with those particular organizations in the community for future events.
Tom used to be an IAS officer in Missouri. He always asked a lot of questions. I have a question regarding Vibrio presentation from Colorado. Could you tell us those PCR tests were based on multiplex tests, and were there single hits, or there were some of them have double, triple hits?
There were a few within there that detected multiple pathogens. I will say I believe the multiple pathogens were mostly so other than that,
so continuing on that thought, those that were culture positive clearly had the risk factors, and only a small portion of those that were PCR positive had the risk factors. So
yes.
Do you think because they were not even single hits, they could have been false positives? And how many of those were culture positive as well? Those that did not have a risk factor.
So I haven't looked at that. I mean, in the end, we only had 12 cases over the three-year time period since multiplex PCR panels have been adopted. We're starting to look at that information, and I think as time goes on, we're going to have better information about what the probable cases now mean, but we didn't have a lot of time.
Thank you. It just goes back to the issue. If we start counting every disease on with multiple PCR kits, we'll just artificially increase disease counts, which may be not true.
I was afraid it's in the Nebraska. Could the folks who did the raw milk comment on the why we had four quinolone resistance in the Campylobacter? Was there any speculation about that, or how common that is? Or, I guess probably it's not easy for us to test, so it doesn't get done a whole lot unless you have an outbreak and you have to send it to CDC.
I will say that, you know, based on NARMS data, it is not uncommon. If you look at kind of the trends in Cipro resistance, it is definitely on its way up. And I want to say that, like, in 2014, it was somewhere around 27% in NARMS. So it's certainly not surprising, but it's a concerning trend. In terms of why, you know, I would hate to speculate. I know that this dairy made a lot of claims that at least the cows that they sold for meat were all antibiotic-free. They didn't have any clear claims about the dairy cows, but they did tell us that none of them had been sick recently or treated with any antibiotics. So, you know, hard to know exactly how that got there, but, you know, we were certainly struck by the fact that these were supposed to be, you know, very, like, natural, antibiotic-free farms, and, you know, it's still a place where you're seeing that resistance. So, not exactly sure why, but it's unfortunately part of a growing trend.
I have a question for Lindsay. So Lindsay, with the interview and your opt-in, opt-out, has Kansas decided to enforce opting in for the interviews?
No.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? If not, thank you all for attending. Please enjoy break.